Alright guys, welcome back to another episode of the Brandon Show podcast. In today's episode, I will be talking about what it may have been like as a teenager working in a factory during the Industrial Revolution. And then I will also give the top stories that have made the news recently. Child labor has been a massive problem in several countries over the past few hundred years, which has led to new labor laws. Today on The Brandon Show, predicting the feelings of teenagers working at factories in the Industrial Revolution. Later, a mass shooting in Sacramento leaves 6 people dead, and Team Canada is heading to the World Cup. The Brandon Show starts now. Back in the old days, during the Industrial Revolution, the children were forced to go to school up until the certain age of 10, where they were forced into labor at factories. Now, before we hop into the back in time predictions, let's start off with the definition. The Industrial Revolution in modern history is the process of change from an agrarian and handicraft economy to one dominated by industry and machine manufacturing. These technological changes introduced novel ways of working and living and fundamentally transformed society. Anyways, those factory conditions back then were not a pretty sight, because during that time, if someone got hurt or killed, they or their family members were essentially told to walk it off. I could imagine that it was a horrible experience. I am going to go through the 5 senses and tell you what I believe it was like for all those children. Now, remember, this happened in the 1800s. So anything that I say here is something that probably happened back then. And it could still happen these days in places like China, Cambodia, and other parts of Asia. So let's get started. Let's start off with the nose. I believe you could very much smell the burning of some materials. You could probably also smell the air, especially when someone has a cold or is sick. You could probably also smell the steam and smoke. Now for the eyes, I believe you would see a lot of children with frowns on their face and a lot of people injured, because there weren't proper safety measures. You would also see smudges and smog on buildings, in the rivers, and in the air. All the children would be covered in black soot and be covered or drenching in sweat. Now for hearing, I believe I would hear moaning and crying from the children who were in pain and very tired. I do picture there being conversations about work, but not anything negative because of the fear the kids would get hurt or yelled at by their bosses. And I know that happens a lot in places like China. Like if you disobey your boss or anything, that will definitely not go well. Now for taste, this was kind of a difficult one for me, but I can picture tasting the burnt smell in the air, and any bit of food they got was good because they spent most of their time working. So any food they got, like a piece of bread or something, was probably delicious to them. Obviously, I wouldn't know that, but it obviously not a great condition. Obviously, if you want a healthy person, you need to eat nutrition. You have to keep healthy. Now, you could also taste the blood and soot in the air and in your mouth. I know every now and again I do taste blood, and it's usually because when I scratch the top of my mouth. which is terrible. That's a terrible feeling. Another feeling. I picture feeling rough surfaces with pain coming as you continued to push through the hard labor. You would feel extremely tired. However, I do picture them in a different world, not thinking of anything else, as they were brainwashed to work at the coal mines and factories. The act of sending kids to sweatshops was cruel then, and is still cruel now, just thinking about it, as child labor still continues in several countries in Asia and Africa. According to EIU.edu, young children endured some of the harshest conditions. Work days would often be 10 to 14 hours with minimal breaks during the shift. Factories employing children were often very dangerous places, leading to injuries and even deaths. New labor laws for Canada and England include the workers are only allowed to work a maximum of 12 hours, unless there is a critical exception. By law, UK employers must pay the minimum wage, which varies depending on age and also increases each year. There are some exceptions for employees such as apprentices. Employees over the age of 23 are also legally obliged to receive the national living wage. New safety measures such as barriers and danger signs have been implemented in other parts of the world. However, that isn't everywhere. For example, in places like India and China, packed sweatshops have gone up in flames. With no proper escape route, it becomes impossible to escape without being severely burnt or even killed. That being said, those places are literal death traps. That wraps up the discussion on child labor back in the Industrial Revolution. It is time for the top stories making news recently. An interprovincial Amber Alert issued in BC on Saturday, March 26, has ended with an arrest in Ontario. The alert pertained to two children, one 4 years old and the other 10 months, who police believed had been abducted by their 36-year-old father in Fort St. John, BC on Thursday. The children's 23-year-old mother was also taken from the home against her will. First issued in BC late Saturday morning, the alert was extended to the provinces of Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba, but was canceled shortly before 4 p.m. Pacific time. In a news release Saturday afternoon, BC RCMP said they believed the suspect was headed east, possibly to Ontario. BC RCMP shared this information with police in neighboring jurisdictions across the country, who also began their own search efforts. By 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time today, the Ontario Provincial Police confirmed that they had located the vehicle and the four individuals in Kenora, Ontario, just east of Manitoba. The man was taken into custody. The mother and her two children are safe and receiving support. BC Mounties thanked police agencies from other provinces for their assistance and said they would be working with OPP to further the investigation and recommend changes in the case. There has been a deadly mass shooting in Sacramento, California. At least 6 people were killed and 12 others injured. Lucy Yang reports.
6 were killed, at least 10 others injured, according to police, when gunfire erupted early Sunday morning in downtown Sacramento, just blocks from the state capitol.
One of the victims has a GSW to the right leg.
3 walking gunshot wound victims.
I copy that. We need more units over there.
The shooting happened just after 2 a.m. California time.
This morning, our city has a broken heart. This is a senseless and unacceptable tragedy. And I emphasize the word unacceptable.
Sacramento police are handling the investigation with assistance from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. Investigators are also reaching out to the public, asking for photos, videos, or any relevant evidence to be submitted to police.
We are asking for the public's help in helping us to identify the suspects in this and provide any information that you can to help us solve this.
An information center has been set up for frantic families of the victims.
I'm just to the point right now, I don't know what to do. I don't even think this is real. I feel like it's a dream.
California's Governor Gavin Newsom and his wife releasing this statement, quote, "The scourge of gun violence continues to be a crisis in our country, and we must resolve to bring an end to this carnage."
Police in Sacramento have now confirmed that there were two suspects and 12 people were injured, even though in Lucy Yang's report, she said 10. It was eventually updated to 12. At least 5 people are dead after a serious house fire in Brampton, Ontario. 2 of the victims were adults. 3 of the victims were children. 3 people managed to make it out alive. Fire crews responded early on March 28th to reports of the fire. Investigation is underway. The second black box has been recovered following that plane crash in China. All 132 people on board were killed in the crash. The first black box was found earlier last week. A remarkable scene at Ontario's CARP Airport. A plane crashed at the airfield. However, both people inside the aircraft survived with 0 injuries. The Transportation Safety Board has released its final report into what caused a train derailment near Field, BC in February 2019. They say brake failure and the weather being cold led to the CP rail train flying off the tracks, killing 3 people. Music fans are remembering a well-known drummer, Taylor Hawkins, who was a member of the Foo Fighters, has died after chest complications that involved drugs at a Bogota, Colombia hotel. The group was on tour at the time of the death. Estelle Harris has died at the age of 93. She was an actor on Seinfeld and Toy Story. She died of natural causes. Team Canada is heading to the World Cup for the first time after a 36-year drought. The team qualified after a tense matchup against Jamaica. The World Cup is set to be held in Qatar later this year in November. Regina and Saskatoon City Councils voted unanimously for the bid for the two cities to host the World Juniors in 2023 because Russia can't due to the Ukraine conflict. Saskatchewan has hosted the tournament twice in the past, but this time there is stiff Canadian competition with cities in the Maritimes and other parts of the country in the bid. The Highway 9 Predators U15 hockey team have won the A banner. The team that was made up with people from Priestville, Kenora, Sturgis, and Norquay managed to pull off the win against Indian Head on Sunday evening. The final score was 3-2 for the Predators. The Priestville Pats U18 hockey team managed to pull off the win against Moosemen. As a result, they won the A banner on Wednesday evening for their age group. This is the second A banner to be won by Rhett Lubba and Mason Babuque, who were on the U15 team that won the A banner for the Highway 9 Predators on Sunday. So, what a coincidence. The senior boys badminton team for Kenora managed to pull off several wins at 2 recent tournaments. Thomas Haber and Logan Luchak won gold medals in both tournaments. Now to the Ukraine crisis. Several strikes have been reported in Lviv. The city was once considered a safe haven for refugees. And Lzinski is now accusing Russia of genocide. Annie Bergeron-Oliver reports.
In much of northern Ukraine, including the region around the capital, Kyiv, local forces are now back in control. But the retreat of Russian forces is revealing new horrors. In the town of Bucha, the bodies of civilians lay in the streets. Some were shot and killed, their hands and feet bound behind their backs. The scenes leaving neighbors scarred. He worked in landscaping, this man says about his friend. A peaceful, honest person, he was crushed to death with a Russian armored personnel carrier.
Bucha massacre is the most outrageous atrocity of the 21st century.
Asked today about the images coming out of Bucha, the U.S. Secretary of State said Russia needs to be held accountable for the war crimes it's committing.
We can't become numb to this. We can't normalize this. This is the reality of what's going on every single day, as long as Russia's brutality against Ukraine continues. That's why it needs to come to an end.
As Russian soldiers retreat from the north, many are redeploying to the east and the south, where attacks are ramping up.
Okay, General.
This morning, Russian forces launched their biggest attack yet on the port city of Odessa. Missiles striking a crucial oil refinery and three fuel storage facilities. The impact was huge, this resident says. The children were in a panic. The windows were blown in. It was terrifying. Meanwhile, in Mariupol, another hard-hit port city, Russian state TV shows the military distributing much-needed humanitarian aid to residents. But at the same time, their forces are moving deeper into the city, with bombings and shellings continuing daily.
It is a brutality against civilians we haven't seen in Europe for decades, and it's horrific and it's absolutely unacceptable.
Russia is denying that its forces were responsible for the civilian deaths in Bucha. Today, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau reaffirmed Canada's support for Ukraine, saying those responsible for what he called egregious and appalling attacks will be brought to justice. Annie Bergeron-Oliver, CTV News, Ottawa.
Now, one community that has a lot of Ukrainian roots is Kenora, Saskatchewan. Brady Lang reports.
The first thing you see when entering Kenora is a 15-foot statue. Lashia is her name, coined by the locals in the Ukrainian rich community.
That shows a warm community that's willing to welcome people, and we show it off every chance we get. We never thought of it as being biggest or best or anything. It just, we think of it as being a very warm, welcoming symbol.
Dorothy and Terry Coral are in charge of the upkeep of the community's Ukrainian museum. In it, countless Ukrainian artifacts, keepsakes, tools, clothing, books, maps, and pictures, a look back in time.
They wanted to leave a legacy of where they came from and what they stood for. It's a small way of showing what they stood for. Their homeland and some of the traditions here.
The museum began as a small exhibit. It was a representation of how the community was created. Back in 1897, 180 families settled in Kenora from West Ukraine, eventually creating the town.
We did have a Ukrainian taught at the schools. We have a Ukrainian taught in the various churches. People were proud to retain what they had brought from the old country, and there was nothing to be ashamed of, so they just kept it.
And it's not just within this museum that Kenora celebrates its culture. There's the Heritage Orthodox Church and the New Orthodox Church. Also, the Park of Hope and street signs show off Lashia. Terry has another reason why the community continues with its traditions.
People are stubborn, I guess.
Jokes aside, the community has offered its help financially to those in the war, and now they're preparing to open their doors to displaced Ukrainians. When asked how many people of Ukrainian descent are in the community, Dorothy couldn't quite put her finger on it, but...
I couldn't even guess. And then there's those who just like pierogies.
Brady Lang, CTV News, Kenora.
It is time for the weather forecast in Kenora for today, April 3rd, 2022. It is supposed to be plus 1 for 8 o'clock p.m. and is expected to drop down to minus 2 for tonight. For Monday, it is expected to be 4 degrees at best with a couple clouds in the sky, but it is still going to be a bit sunny. There's also a chance of precipitation. That's only 20%. However, for Tuesday, a 70% chance of precipitation with potential snow with 2 degrees at best. That wraps up the Brandon Show for today. Thank you for listening and have a great day.